Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, March 24th, 2014. Good afternoon, Alfred.
Hello, Melody.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. This isn't a holiday or anything like that?
No holiday. We need to have a holiday today. That way I wouldn't have to tell the listeners what gold did today. However, it's a great buying opportunity for gold today. You have gold. They managed down 2380, 1311.90. You have silver down 31 at 20.07, and platinum was down 7 at 1428. And palladium is just sort of hanging out there at $796. I guess it touched briefly at 800. That's my magic number, was 800 on palladium. We're going to have to see what goes on here. But again, that's a lot of the situations happening with, of course, Russia and Ukraine. So we'll have to see if there's any situations that evolve from that. And we'll just have to see how high it goes. I mean, the highest was 1,000, and that was a Ford play. Ford Motors play, so that's why we'll just have to see if it manages to beat this 800. But USDX wasn't able to beat the 80 level very long, back down 79.71, down 0.20 today. Crude oil's just basically there, floating along the line of 100, 99.38, down 0.08. And the paper markets today, I don't believe they were able to, the tech stocks sent the markets a little bit lower today. The NASDAQ was down about 1.2%, 42.26, down 50. You had the Dow slip about 26 points at 16,276, and the S&P dropped about 0.5%, 18.57. The 10-year yield is still trending 2.73%, 0.02 down for the day. And we're going to have to start following the euro. We haven't been giving that number for a while, but it seems to be very important with what's playing out along with Europe. And, of course, I believe we're seeing a major shift in world economies. We're seeing a major shift in positioning. And I think a lot of these countries have already, they understand what is going on financially, how it's going to affect their money and their central banks. So it's interesting, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on, Al.
There's always a lot going on one level. The question is, there a lot going on that's rational? Is there a lot going on that's hyped and being artificially made to go on? It's hard to know sometimes whether you're looking at something that's happening in the free market, or are you looking at the result of manipulation?
Pretty much everything is manipulated anymore. It's very difficult, and there is no free markets at all, I don't think, in anything. But they still do react to certain news, to certain situations.
Yeah, but is it a real reaction, or is it a feigned reaction caused by manipulation? To what extent is it real? And how long can it be manipulated? And when you say there's no free market, that just reminds me of the old, they used to say there's no free lunch. Now, thanks to Obama, maybe there is a free lunch, but there's no free market. Yeah, we've given up the free market.
I like that.
You can have a free lunch.
I like that, Al. I was talking to someone prior to the program, and we were talking about this, the deception in this world today. You don't know what to believe, what not to believe, and it's part of the times in which we live. And the more people are prepared, the less deception. You don't have to worry about it.
It's not only a question of the more people are prepared, and you're talking about prepared in the sense that they're ready for serious economic problems, in the sense of having sufficient food stored and rifle and ammunition and so on, and gold and silver. I think that's what you mean by prepared. Is that true?
That's true.
What I think is this. I think the manipulation, particularly the blatant manipulation, I mean, everybody knows this now who looks at the market. There are people in positions of power. You know, folks like us have been talking about market manipulation for years. Yes. And sometimes you sound like you're a crackpot, and sometimes people believe you. But we are having more and more people out of mainstream to say, oh, yeah, it's manipulated. It's all manipulated. They're coming around to our perspective on this. And the thing that's interesting about that is that as the perception of manipulation grows and becomes more obvious and more blatant, the government isn't hardly trying to conceal the manipulation. They're not coming right out and saying, well, we're going to knock the market up 30 points or down 40 points or whatever. They're not doing that. I get that. We won't hear that officially. We certainly won't hear the government saying, well, tomorrow we're going to make the market go up 43 points. That's not going to happen. But they are still blatant in a way that's surprising. And as the manipulation becomes more commonplace and less deniable, we have to wonder, why are they doing it? Why not let the free market just handle things? And the answer has to be, the answer appears to be, and almost certainly has to be, it's because the entire system is so fragile right now that if they stop manipulating, we would have a result similar to what would happen if they stopped injecting money into the banking and investment community with quantitative easing. We're on the manipulation and the unwillingness to trust in the free market is evidence that the government and the economy perceives us to be on the edge of serious trouble. They can't afford to allow the free market to function fully in this environment, because if it does, the free market might stampede. We might wind up in another deeper step down in the recession, or perhaps even depression. So the manipulation itself, to my mind, becomes evidence of, I don't care if they can make the Dow Jones jump to 18,000 tomorrow. To my mind, this is not evidence of the government's power. This would be evidence of the government's desperation to cause people to have confidence where there may not be any grounds for confidence. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. There was an interview today. Most people, you can find it on online. He was a money manager, and he says the Fed is killing the recovery. And there was one point in his interview where he talked about the question was, but the Fed does seem to have boosted stocks. Even if it did nothing else, doesn't a better market help the economy? His response was, yes, the Fed can manipulate stock prices.
Yeah.
That's perhaps the only thing they can do. And you would think that you would want to get an advantage from the wealth effect when you know you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to give it back once the Fed reverses its course. And that's pretty much what's going to happen. You know, the Fed is going to reverse its course. And it would have been better to have higher interest rates so that people with money could at least benefited from having their money in the banks, which would have helped the banks. Because they would have been able to make loans, and you know, people would have a higher rate on the savings that they have. That to me, and that wouldn't help the markets much. But we all know the money that the Fed put in the market wasn't really to help the economy. It was really to help the banks. They became more powerful, and again, it was another shift of power and wealth.
Well, the thing about depositing money with the banks is that they have the advantage of fractional reserve banking.
That's right.
Which means if I deposit $1,000 with the bank, in theory, the bank can lend up to $10,000 to other, you know, to other customers. My $1,000 becomes, in theory, capital and collateral sufficient to justify the lending of 9 or 10 times however much I deposited.
Mm-hmm.
So they want people to make deposits in the bank. All right, and when I say they want people to make deposits in the bank, it's not just in the sense they want people or the government to make deposits in the bank in the normal sense. They want people to borrow from the bank,
mm-hmm.
because the note that they sign becomes collateral that can potentially, I go in and borrow $100,000 from the bank can put the note in the vault, and in theory, they can lend 9 or 10 times as much money as the face value of the note I've just signed based on nothing more than my signature. So this is why confidence is so important in the economy, because confidence in the economy is absolutely necessary to justify borrowing from a bank. You don't take out a loan if you don't think you're going to be able to repay it. You don't take out a loan if you're not sure that your job is secure. You don't take out a loan if you don't think you're going to get a raise in 6 months. All right? You need that positive confidence in the economy to justify taking out a loan. And if you do, and you take out a nice fat loan, well, then the bank, that loan with that piece of paper, the note with your signature on it, can be used as collateral for a bank to lend 9, 10 times that much money into the economy. So confidence is critical to borrowing, and borrowing is critical. It is the fundamental nature of creating money. We talk about the Federal Reserve spends money out of thin air. Well, they do. They spend currency out of thin air. But the big mechanism for creating money in this fractional reserve economy, where we use a debt-based monetary system, the primary means is by people borrowing money from the banks. And they have to have confidence in the economy before they'll take out the loan, because if they think we're going into a depression, they're not going to take out that loan. They know if we do, we're going to have to pay off the loan in more expensive dollars. They want to see this economy hopping and jumping. And again, this is why we need the illusion of the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
It's to shore up public confidence. As long as we're confident, we'll borrow. As long as we borrow, they can create money out of thin air. And manipulation is apparently deemed to be critical to maintaining public confidence. And that's exactly why the manipulation, to my mind, particularly when it becomes blatant and hard to just, everybody looks at it, everybody's, oh, yeah, yeah, they manipulate the market. I mean, it was 2 years ago. It was hard to convince anyone that they were manipulating the gold and silver markets. And right now,
there's
people coming out and saying, no, they manipulate all the markets. It's not just gold and silver. It's everything. It's all manipulated. Well, it shores up public confidence. That's the object. And if they keep their confidence, they borrow. And if they borrow, that's the major mechanism for creating currency, new currency in this economy. So the whole thing becomes a peculiar house of cards. And you can see it, and virtually everyone listening to this program grasps the idea that we are in a house of cards and that we are in some jeopardy. And therefore, you know, government is trying to maintain public confidence, and the harder they work at it, the more evidence we have that this house of cards is trembling. So what do you do? You, again, look at fundamentals as best you can, as best you're able to understand them, and you make decisions about how you will invest in your future. And maybe you're going to decide to invest in stocks if you think the economy is doing well and we're coming out of the recession and we're headed into a recovery. And on the other hand, if you look at the economy and in your opinion looks like we're coming to difficult and dangerous times, then you have a different investment choice. Sit back and say, no, I don't think this is going to work. I don't think we're going to, despite the manipulation in the stock market and the artificial support and so on, I think we're headed into a difficult situation. You know, I was just reading where the average bull market lasts about 4.5 years in the stock market. And the one we have right now, so far as it can be called a bull market, is it's 5 years old from its bottom. All right, most recent bottom, it's been 5 years coming up. Arguably a bull market. It was knocked down to that low 5 years ago. But regardless, in theory, statistically, we're about due to see it go into a bear market under any circumstances. But will the government allow that to happen? And can the government stop it from happening indefinitely? The big question is, can you prime the pump with manipulation? Can we manipulate the economy enough right now with whatever economic lies and deceptions can be conjured up and supported and maintained? Can we manipulate the economy right now to generate a true recovery? Or can we only manipulate it enough to kind of hold things together until the stuff hits the fan? I think we can only manipulate until the stuff hits the fan. I think there's ultimately a limit on how much manipulation is possible, and I think eventually the manipulation has to end, in large part because the government is to a significant degree broke. Can't afford to engage in any more wars, having to shut back, reduce the size of the army. You know, I don't think they can afford to play the game anymore. And that means a moment is coming when they're going to have to admit, gee, we'd like to keep manipulating, but we can't do it. And then what? And it's not just in this country. You know, the manipulation to some degree is taking place, you know, greater or lesser degree in most of the major economies of the world. It indicates the whole house of cards is trembling, is holding together just by force of governmental determination and will rather than the actual strength of the economy. So how long can that be sustained? Probably not very long. What else can't be sustained? Can't continue this line of conversation because it's time for some commercials here on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just wanted to remind the listeners to visit our website at dgscoins.com. DGS, Discount Gold Silver Coins, COINS.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, all of our programs are archived. There, if you get lonely some night and you don't have anything to do, you can listen to an archive of Al and myself. So, DGScoins.com. And for all your gold and silver, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Things are going to become exciting now, I think, in the very close future. It's just... So there's something in the air.
Yeah, I understand
except
that.
Except that airliner. But there's something in the air. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's, again, there's just so much information, misinformation, disinformation, some truth involved in it all. But
all by itself, the volume, just the sheer volume of information does not exactly inspire confidence. You know, they say no news is good news. Well, we are not living in a time of no news. We've got news coming at us on Twitter and RSS feeds and blogs and radio programs and mainstream media and this sort of thing. It comes at us every day in a tidal wave. And insofar as no news is good news, then a lot of news is not necessarily good news. Yet the mass of news, the multitude of news reports on one thing or another, it's hard it's hard to say that they are merely a response to public curiosity. There's a lot of news coming at us all the time, and the volume alone makes you wonder, are things stable? Are things reliable right now? Or, again, is the House of Cards beginning to tremble in a way where people are reporting, oh, look, over there at the card at the north end of the House of Cards, that's shaking, and the card on the third floor is shaking, and so on. They, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing in the news, and just the volume alone does not doesn't necessarily scare us. It's still, you sit there and wonder about it. It makes you wonder, what's going on here? It's not business as usual. It's not business as usual. And that's what you can say. You know, that's whatever you say about market manipulation, whatever you say about the volume of news that's coming across the airwaves and the internet and whatever, you can say that this is not business as usual. Now, is that necessarily good? Is it necessarily bad? I don't know. I can't say for sure. I mean, I have my own opinion, my own bias on that. But if it's not business as usual, then that's cause for people to sit around and pay attention, pay close attention, because something's going on. And it may be that we can't quite explain it yet, but we can. You see the leaves in the breeze, and we talk about them on the program on a regular basis. And we keep seeing more leaves in the breeze. They seem to generally be blowing in a particular direction. Here's part of that direction, perhaps. So this is from Business Insider, and it's just a small article. And the headline is, U.S. Manufacturing Slows. The preliminary results of Markets, monthly U.S. Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index survey, point to a larger than expected slowdown in the pace of expansion in manufacturing output this month. You know, that is such an idiotic sentence. I'm reading from the market report. It's a 27-word sentence. That's not terrible. All right. But a larger than expected slowdown in the pace of expansion. I don't know. You know,
It was the weather.
Yeah, it might be. Weather. Yeah, maybe unexpectedly, it was unexpectedly cold in the wintertime. So, and again, it's probably been unexpectedly windy in March, and it'll be unexpectedly hot in July, and you know, and so on.
It dropped.
It dropped from 55.5 in February's survey. It dropped to 55.5 for March. From the February survey's 57.1 reading, the consensus forecast of market economists was that the index would fall, but only to 56.5. So they thought it would fall, what, 0.6 of a point, and instead it fell 1 point, 0.6, 1 6 points. Is that significant, Melody? Manufacturing, this purchasing manager
index. Well,
Is it significant, or is it just white noise?
It has to get below 50 for it to really have an impact. But, I mean, any drop, to me, I think, it shows it's part of the leaves of the breeze. So, I mean, they could bump it up,
yeah,
they could bump it down. But I think when you put it in addition to China's drop in manufacturing,
exactly,
then it means something. And I was reading an article earlier today about China and how they're going to address their problems, and it's true, they're not going to address their problems in the same manner that we do. And so it's again just another, you know, sign and that things are falling apart. They're not growing, they're falling apart.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Baltic Index. I haven't paid any attention to it for some time. But I'm going to assume, I'm sure it's low. It's a measure of how much shipping is taking place in the world. And I don't know whether it's coming up from a low or continuing to decline or just holding at a low level compared to what it was 2007, 2008. It was still hot. It was still running, you know, hard and fast, and now it's not. Do you follow the Baltic Index at all?
Well, I mean, it was down. I'd have to look at the chart to see where it's been, but
it's
a 1599. It was down today about 1.33%.
Okay. And it's just a measure of how much international trade is taking place. It's a measure of how many ships are moving across the ocean, hauling goods and services from Europe to the United States, from the United States to South America and so on. They measure the total amount of transportation of goods by ocean, and from that we can see a good indication, reliable indication of whether the economy is going up or it's going down. The global economy is going up, going down.
Well, for the past year it was up 71, but year to date is down almost 30%. So that's significant for 3 months.
I agree. Well, it sure is. It's 10% a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what it averages out to. So, again, we don't even hear. When was the last time we heard President Obama or anyone in his administration say that the recovery is in progress or it's right around the corner and it'll be here soon? I haven't heard it lately, and it may be they talk about it all the time, but it seems like even they have kind of given up on that particular line. People are, just laughing a little bit. Oh, yeah, the recovery. It'll be coming along with a dozen unicorns marching in a parade. You know, a parade of unicorns will be coming along, and the recovery will be at the head of the parade of unicorns. Well, probably not. I haven't heard it. Have you? Is it something I just haven't?
No, I mean, they certainly talk about the concerns. I mean, all the all economic news anymore is all focused from the Fed. I mean, as they're the ones who really release any information. I mean, as far as their withdrawing of QE and all this and the jobs and so forth, it seems like all of that has been shifted to the Federal Reserve to talk about our economy and so forth. It's no longer the politicians. The politicians talk about Obamacare.
They can't get anything done anyway.
No.
So we don't look to the politicians who save us. We look to the Federal Reserve, and insofar as we react strongly to whatever the Federal Reserve says, if Janet Yellen says just a couple of right words, the market can jump. If she says the wrong words, the market can fall. Again, that's consistent with the idea that the market is being manipulated. It's not simply responding to questions of supply and demand in the free market. That's not what we're seeing. We are depending upon the Federal Reserve to somehow maintain our economy. And all by itself, it tells us that the economy is not self-sufficient. We have to depend on the Federal Reserve to stimulate the economy, which tells us, again, what? The economy is not capable of self-stimulation, essentially, of just generating enough steam where it can take off. We don't need the Federal Reserve. You know, when the economy is really strong, the only time we hear about the Federal Reserve is if they take steps, strong steps, to control inflation or reduce the supply of money to cool the economy because it's growing too hot. They're not trying to cool the economy. They're working hard to try to stimulate it, and they've certainly succeeded to the extent that we haven't had a collapse. But you can also look back and say, how much stimulation have they provided, and how much bang for buck have we really received in the economy? It's just another leaf in the breeze that says, look, we are still unstable, circumstances are unreliable, and for the moment, that's something everyone can probably factor into their investment decisions. Is there grounds for you folks to be confident in the economy? Is there real grounds for you to be confident in the economy, in your job, in whatever? And for many people, the answer is no. Some of us are doing okay. Some people do okay. Some people's jobs are secure. But a lot of people's jobs aren't. And, of course, we've got still a significant number of people who are unemployed and unlikely to become employed in the near future.
Well, I think what's interesting is this Israel closes embassies around the world as diplomats strike. This is out of Reuters. I mean, does anybody really believe that? Where you have an unprecedented strike that started yesterday, forcing complete closure of embassies around the world as they escalate a dispute over pay? Really?
Yeah, no. I mean, that's a story that's hard to believe.
I mean...
The diplomats. I don't know. How do you join the diplomat union? What are the dues to join the diplomat union? And I wonder what sort of a pension plan they have, and do they have a limited number of hours they can work? Do they get paid overtime?
They are completely shutting down the foreign ministry offices and missions abroad. This is the first time it has ever happened. It's escalating the action, supposedly, to a full strike. This is the first by the diplomatic corps since the country's establishment in 1948. They're going to close all of Israel's 102 missions abroad, paralyzing most diplomatic work in other countries in the United Nations. What usually happens when you have a country or a nation that brings home all of their foreign diplomats?
War.
War.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
that is that's the suspicion on this. I look at it and I think to myself, how could you organize all of the diplomats at 122 foreign missions? We're talking about Israeli diplomats at 102 foreign missions. How could you organize all of them to go on strike? These people are spread around the country, or excuse me, around the world. Could General Motors, could the United Auto Workers, can they organize a strike against General Motors that takes place not only here at all of the General Motors plants here in the United States, plus all of the General Motors plants in Europe or China or wherever they are around the world? I can understand, yes, you can get a strike in one country. How do you get a strike in all of them? It really is a strange and suspicious, just a bizarre report, and they say it's the first time this has ever happened in Israel's history since 1948. I'm not sure it's ever happened before for any country. Has any country ever before, has their diplomatic corps just gone out on strike and say, that's it, we've got to have more money, or we're going to quit?
And if we come, and if we come to this conclusion... that perhaps war, when you bring home everyone, well, what do you think Iran is thinking about? I mean, don't you think they've come to the same conclusion? Look at this. Any other country that has problems with Israel, don't you think they're thinking the same thing?
I understand.
That they have something that... is about to happen. And someone also brought up to my attention that it's only, 3 weeks away for the first blood moon?
I don't know. I follow that. That goes, it's something that takes place in 2014 and in 2015.
There's four of them. And I think we do need
to
talk.
More than that. I think there's six altogether. I'm not sure. Plus an eclipse in the middle. And it's going to take a period of time, and some people attach significance to it, and some people don't.
Well, if you
don't
believe this is a spiritual war,
we're having a blood moon right now, and it's our producer, and he's playing music, telling us it's time for more commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have
have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and we have a caller, Ed Rael from Arizona. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, Ed Rael? Is that right?
Yes. My name is Rael, and I would like to ask Melody this question. Melody, I'm curious about these different currencies. Do they go along with the coin? Like, which currency is the strongest, and would their coin be the strongest in, say, a reset?
I'm not sure what you mean by different currencies and their coins, different countries.
Yes. Yeah. Like, in other words, like, if our dollar went down the drain, and we had silver or gold in United States currency and United States coins, and say China's economy was the best, would their coin be worth more?
I mean, gold is going to be, if the world currencies reset, gold
yeah.
will also reset to all currencies. So owning a foreign gold coin is not going to make it any more valuable. So,
I'm kind of concerned about if I had a foreign gold coin with the United States, which they did in the past, and it wasn't quite as tyrannical as it is today, they confiscated the gold.
You'll still get your gold value out of the item. When they confiscated gold in 33, they still paid you for it. Of course, gold went up, you know, double in 2 weeks thereafter. But, I mean, you were still paid for your gold. So I don't think...
No, if they confiscated it again and I had a foreign coin, would they be able to confiscate that also?
Well, you'll be able to sell it into the market first and get the current rate of exchange for it.
The reality, the way I understand the alleged confiscation, they didn't come down and knock on doors and demand that, you know, you turned in. What they did is they simply... As people deposited gold in the banking system, the gold was just pulled out.
No,
and
they
made a point of not taking the gold that was prior to 1933.
What?
They declared earlier coins to be collectibles.
It wasn't the date. It was coins of rare and unusual value. So the coins that were circulated were taken out of circulation. People were allowed to keep up, I believe, up to $800 or $1,000 of value of their gold, but they were given a time frame to where they had to turn it in, and that's what your currencies are too. Whenever you usually have a devaluation of your currencies, Mexico, you have a certain time to turn in your currencies. After that, they're not worth anything, but you're given a chance to, you know, here, give us three of your dollars and we'll give you one of these new ones. So that's how you lose your value of your, you hand in three, you get one back. But in 33, they give you a certain amount of time by a certain date. You have to hand it in. They'll pay you for it. But you were able to keep coins of rare and unusual value. It wasn't the date that kept them from being applied to rare and unusual. It was the value of the coin. So collector coins, basically.
I see. Okay.
We're not.
Okay,
we're
well,
not,
then answer my no, question.
There's another point
thank
in
you.
That is that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Audra.
Rael.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Another point, you talk about people turning in their cash. You turn in three of your current dollars to get one of the new and improved dollars. Well, that would be significant and important when you were living in an economy that was based on cash in the sense of tangible dollars and even silver dollars, tangible, you know, green pieces of paper. But right now, virtually everything we do is digital. Okay, our currency is primarily in the form of credit cards, debit cards, even checks that are. And the point I'm making is, you're not going to walk. How much cash does the average person have?
Well, that's the point. They'll save you the trip. They'll save you the trip to the bank. They'll just do it automatically.
That's what I mean.
They'll just do it automatically.
That's what I mean.
But
that's where this becomes interesting, because they won't necessarily say, oh, guess what? You've got 6 weeks to turn in your dollars to get new dollars. Because not many people are packing that much cash other than drug dealers and I don't know who else. There you can turn the value of your currency overnight without confiscating anything. They just say, here it is. This is the new deal. Right? And here's what's going to happen. And here's the way it is. And they can, most of our cash, insofar as we have, it can be said that you have cash. Where is it? Is it in your wallet or is it in your digital bank account? It's in your digital bank account.
I think her main question was, you know, is your foreign coins going to end? And I don't see anything wrong with owning foreign coins. I've heard arguments from various dealers out there, arguments pro foreign gold. I've seen arguments where you only want U.S. coins. And I think as long as you continue to go with the thought that you want to purchase things that are recognizable and acceptable, that is going to be key. British sovereigns are okay. Swiss francs are okay. Your Krugerrands, yeah, that's foreign. I mean, even Canadian maple leaves would be considered foreign. They're all okay. Philharmonics are okay. What you don't want to get into is these, the coin, gold coins from Uruguay. You know, people don't even know where that is on the map. These coins that I mentioned previously, they're world recognized. And I think we live in a different world today. And if things are going to be confiscated,
I don't worry about confiscation.
I don't see it as being things are. I don't think they're going to confiscate this time. That doesn't take the value away.
They don't have the right to confiscate. You know, they could make the argument that they needed the gold in 1933, and the gold was primarily here in the form of money. The government relied on it. It was part of the banking system, and it could be. And there was a certain justification, because the money was presumed to be that of the United States, there was a certain justification in terms of confiscating it. What's the justification for confiscating gold today?
Well,
any more
the justification,
than
Al, is because...
Pork bellies or
I'll tell you what the justification.
Frozen concentrated orange juice.
There isn't any gold out there to be had. And when you have all these world markets that are, you know, if you believe that the COMEX is running short, if you believe that, you know, the central banks around the world don't have gold in any of them, if you believe our Fort Knox doesn't have any gold in there, I'll guarantee you governments will want your gold.
They'll, yeah, but what? How are they going to sell it to people? They've been telling people that gold isn't money. It's just a commodity. They've been trying to denigrate the value of gold for, 40 years now or more, and say this is just a barbarous relic.
Well, it's kind of like...
Then why do you want it? Well, why do you need it? Why shouldn't I keep the barbarous relic? Why do you want gold, Mr. Obama, if you're telling us that gold is irrelevant, we don't need it, and all we have to do is...
Because the sheeple out there will do what they're told to do.
Some will, some won't.
Some won't, but the majority of the sheeple will. Just like we were talking about earlier in the program, Al, about the manipulations. 2 years ago, if you told anybody that the markets were manipulated, they'd say, oh, you're nuts. Today, they're coming out one by one saying, oh, yeah, it'll be the same thing. Oh, yeah, a couple years ago, gold was bad to have. But now, hey, things are a little bit different. So, I mean, if for a justification, that doesn't mean I'll say it will happen. But for a justification, central banks are going to want gold because gold is still the measure of value. Gold is still the only currency. They know.
No, not just the only currency. Gold is the only money.
The only
there
money.
There are plenty of currencies, but it's not.
It's the only money out there. They know that. So they let us play our little games with their gold, and they go on. They made their wealth. They made their power with digital currency, with all this fiat currency. And you're right. They had a reason in 33. They couldn't have created all these social programs as long as our currency was backed by gold, as long as we had gold as money. They couldn't do these programs, so they had to eliminate it. But now we're to the point where there is no gold in any of these central banks. One of these countries are going to want it. So,
lots of countries want it. As a matter of fact, got an article here on the top 10 nations stockpiling gold. This is in USA Today. And it says last year global demand reached 3,756 metric tons, nearly 3.8 million kilograms or 8.3 million pounds. That total is valued at $170 billion, according to the World Gold Council. Demand was down from the prior year due to heavy outflows in exchange-traded funds and similar products. But bar and coin demand, physical demand, surged 28% year over year as investors still had an appetite for the hard assets. Now, this is very interesting because the price of gold went down at the physical gold. What really happened is the price of paper gold went down. That's what the markets really measure at this time. They measure the price of paper gold. Paper gold went down last year, big time. At the same time, the demand for bar and coins, gold bars, gold coins, surged 28%. All right? So you can see the disconnect between paper gold, prices going down, and demand for physical gold is going up. It's evidence that the two are not the same, and there is not a direct correlation between they sell paper gold, they sell paper certificates on COMEX, but they don't typically back it with physical gold. They do to a greater extent than they have in the past, but it's evidence. Physical gold, paper gold, two different things. He goes on and says, with gold prices posting their first annual loss in more than a decade, talking last year, central banks around the world purchased 368.9 tons of gold in 2013, about 30% above the five-year average of 282 tons per year. So even though the price went down for paper gold last year, the demand by central bankers for physical gold was 30% higher than average for the previous 5 years. The point is that people who know what they're doing are getting gold. Right? They're getting physical gold. It's not just, doom and gloom theorists. It's also people in central banks said, we need more gold. What does that tell you? When the central banks are even taking more gold, what does that tell you? It suggests that there is a consensus among people who really ought to know what's going on. Central bankers. They aren't taking a flyer. They're not speculating on gold. They're sitting back and they're saying, no, this is going to go up. We've got a caller, Lily from Pennsylvania, and we have about 3 minutes left. Lily, what do you have for us?
Hi, both of you. My question is, I'm really confused. You guys and a lot of people all the time have said that there is hardly any gold out there. And lately there's been some people out there talking that there's hundreds of thousands of tons of gold in the Philippines and in Switzerland. And there's a German guy, Strunk, who's just waiting to give it back, dole it out to different countries, to humanity, to just claim it. And if that happened, wouldn't that make the price of gold go way, way, way down?
Yep.
Do you know of any credence to this person's claim that there's hundreds of thousands of tons waiting for humanity to claim it?
I don't know about hundreds of thousands of tons, but I've at least I've heard claims like this. There's been a book written on it called The Gold Wars, if I recall the title of the book. This is an idea that's been bandied about for some time. It's allegedly gold that was stolen from China by Japan and then secreted in the Philippines, among other places. And I don't know what the truth of those stories are, and I'm not sure that anyone else does either. If there is that much additional gold, it would drop the price of gold because the supply goes up, the price goes down.
It depends on when
are these true stories.
It really depends on when it would be released.
Well, it'd be released.
If it's released in a time of turmoil, it wouldn't drop the price at all.
Oh, it might. But the question is, are the stories true? Because people calculate that the total volume of gold in the world is a relatively small quantity. I mean, it's not as big as a lot of people's homes. If you put it into a single cube, and all the gold that's ever been mined is still available. Very little of it has been lost. If those kinds of stories are true, that they have a good idea of how much gold has ever been mined, and how much is really available in the whole world, where did they get 180,000 extra tons of this stuff? How did this stuff... It's hard to explain how this mysterious pile of gold accumulated without anyone noticing up until now. I have serious doubts about these reports. And if they were going to show me the gold, show me the gold. And that's fine with me. When I see it, I'll believe it. But until that time, I won't. I want to thank you for your call, Lily. We've got to go. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Adisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. Meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.